Welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Pitino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your phone calls. We'll get to your tweets. Let's start off with the biggest news item, Paul. After they had their first padded practice, they were wearing, obviously, full pads in terms of uppers and lowers for the first time, so things got a little bit more physical than what we had seen in the previous practices. So we'll get into some of the storylines, but obviously everybody talking about Sterling Shepard going down at practice yesterday during a wide receiver drill. Ben McAdoo did address the media after practice. He classified it as Shepard rolled his ankle, a basketball type of injury. He's going to undergo further testing as a precaution, but it seems as if they're optimistic that hopefully this is not going to be a serious injury.
I think the good thing about it is we're talking about the first week of August instead of the first week of September, because should he miss one, two, three, however many practices, and I think it's likely that they will kind of baby him along.
And there's no need to rush him.
Right, as they get not only precautious about this or cautious about it, but they also want to make sure that they rehab him to the fullest extent that they can before the regular season starts. Quite frankly, okay, the Giants play a week from tomorrow against the Pittsburgh Steelers in their preseason opener. That would be on the 11th. Now, to be honest, do you know what Sterling Shepard is? Yes. Does he have to play in that preseason game? I'm just going to tell fans right now, if he doesn't, and I'm not saying that he will or he won't, so please do not misquote me on Twitter anywhere. But even if he does not, is it that much of a big deal? We know what Sterling Shepard is. He's going to make the team. Okay?
I think
he's on the 53, yes. And guess what? He's probably going to start.
Going out on a limb there, Paul. Let me tell you that. Some bold predictions out of you.
So please, let me say this now. Before anybody else starts jumping on this, and if he doesn't play in the Pittsburgh game, people start to freak out like they did yesterday on Twitter when they first heard that he left practice. Take a deep breath, okay? Because based on what Coach McAdoo said yesterday, you're right. They seem rather hopeful and optimistic about this not being a significant issue.
And you also can't jump to conclusions until the testing is all done. As Ben McAdoo said, he was pressed during that press conference, Paul,
right.
And he said, we're just starting the process. So, I mean, anything else is just purely speculation. But they are classifying as a rolled ankle, and that's obviously a positive at this standpoint.
Let me just say one thing about this. Over the years, and between the two of us, we've been around a long time, okay? I've seen guys walk off the field only to be told the next day they had a torn ACL and they were out for the season. So let's not be amateur doctors,
Yeah. Okay?
Let's just listen to the facts as they've been presented to us by the medical people, through the coach, to us, and that's all we should be dealing with, all right? I went to Fordham. I didn't go to some medical school.
You don't have a doctorate in anything specifically?
Nope. Nope.
No. Okay, just wanted to check.
Nope. But, you know, clearly the Giants seem to be more optimistic about this than pessimistic, and I think that's the only thing you should take with you today.
Now, the other side of the story, which I think is important to talk about, and I don't think it's speculation, Paul, is whenever a player is hurt, no matter how much time they're going to miss, it's an opportunity for somebody else to fill in
Indeed
and get additional
is.
Reps. Now, Tavares King addressed the media yesterday, and when you start to look beyond the top three, we've talked about Dwayne Harris, who's a jack of all trades, but let's not forget about Tavares King and Roger Lewis, who are the two wide receivers that made the team last year that are very much back in the mix. And King is a player that flashed Paul last season, but late in the year when he finally got an opportunity. Remember, he had that touchdown in the playoff game. He, even though he's a polished veteran, you could tell when he speaks to the media, he is not taking anything for granted. But he will certainly not complain if he gets some more additional reps here with Shepard sideline.
Well, I think he also realizes that last year, for most of the season, he was behind Roger Lewis on the depth chart. And one of the major reasons why is that Roger Lewis gave the Giants more production on special teams. And I think Tavares King understands that. And you know, he comes into this camp understanding that, okay, I got to pick things up. I got to be better as a receiver, and I certainly got to be able to do more than that, i.e. special teams, to be able to solidify any spot on this depth chart. I think he totally understands that. So yesterday, when Shepard went out, King started running with the three wide receiver set as the first team group. However, it was him on the outside and Odell Beckham Jr. sliding down into the slot. The Giants have a lot of ways they can go here in terms of practice, which actually may not be such a bad thing to practice different guys in different spots right now while they have the opportunity. You'll see some Ingram in the slot. You'll see some Matt Lacoste in the slot. Okay? You'll see some Beckham in the slot. There's a lot of things they can do. They can even go double tight end. Put Red Ellison in a tight end.
Yeah.
Right? And Ingram is line and slot. You could do some of that too. There's a lot of stuff the Giants can do here. So there's always a silver lining in an injury that doesn't turn out to be major. Major injuries are just bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Minor things, tweaks, if you will, there can be a silver lining in those.
Well, because you're going to wind up bolstering your depth chart. That's the way that I look at it. Guys that may not get a lot of reps in terms of the regular season are at least going to get the experience playing with Eli Manning, lining up in various different spots. And, you know, Ben McAdoo indicated that no matter who you have going into the season, everybody should be well-diversed in terms of gaining experience at their respective positions. So there's no reason why they should hold back in shying away from lining guys up in the slot and in the outside. It's same thing with offensive linemen, Paul. If guys can get reps at guard and tackle, this is the time you do it because you're certainly not going to start experimenting in week three of the regular season when you actually have meaningful games on the line here.
I couldn't agree with you more. And so we're going to find out over the course of the next several days leading into the Pittsburgh game how the Giants want to play this. And then, of course, once they've suited up against the Steelers, we'll see how they then do it in a game. But there's no doubt. And this is why also McAdoo has that one period of practice near the end of practice every day where he gives guys the opportunity to play out of their normal position. We've seen that with the linemen sometimes playing offense and defense. Herzlick, who gets to play tight end. And by the way, did you see him catch the pass?
Made a nice catch yesterday. Yes, right over the middle. Yep.
I mean, this is what McAdoo's mentality is. It doesn't hurt to experiment at different places with different guys because just maybe you catch lightning in a bottle and find out he can do it.
And then you have to throw him in a game, and better he have the reps before the game as opposed to doing it for the first time and being like baptism by fire. So I think it's always advantageous for anybody to get those reps during the course of practice, and that is the silver lining, which I think is a good term, Paul, with Shepard going down. If that opens the door for other players to get some reps, whether it be in practice or the preseason game, that's a way to help the overall product of the team.
And another way to get other guys' reps as you try to figure out the back end of your depth chart is when you give some of your veterans a rest, like JPP yesterday, who was given the day off. He said, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. I wanted to work, but coach said they were going to hold me out. Well, that's part of the plan we heard McAdoo talk about just a few days ago when he said he's going to put guys on pitch counts. He's going to pace some of his veterans because he wants to make sure they're fresh for the season and the potential postseason run. And so if that means a guy like JPP is going to be given a day off like he was yesterday, well, now guess what? More snaps for Okwara, Odighizuwa, Kerry Wynn, you know, Moss. All of a sudden, these guys are now getting extra reps. They're getting pushed up. This is not a bad thing, folks.
That's how you get to the point of the season where Spags is confident enough that he could rotate personnel in and out because he feels as if he's seen enough of them during the course of training camp. So it really goes hand in hand. Before we open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat, just want to give out a few thoughts overall on practice, Paul, because it was the first time that we got to see the players go at it with full pads. The one thing that jumped out to me was I was watching closely the offensive linemen go up against the defensive linemen when they were separated by position. This was not within the team drill, Paul, and this was our first taste of seeing Eric Flowers and the rest of the offensive linemen get tested by the respective defensive linemen, and it was only really the first opportunity, but I like the intensity I saw from the group. It seems as if everybody was challenging one another, and DJ Fluker got mixed in at the right guard spot. Brett Jones got mixed in at center. I think they really gave everybody a good opportunity to get tested from pressure situations.
Well, obviously, this is the most contact that they've been allowed so far during training camp, and they made the most of it. I mean, there were even a couple of flare-ups there, and Coach McAdoo said, hey, it was under control, and it's within the family, it's okay. But I will tell you, there was some hitting going on, especially in the trenches. And I think that Bobby Hart at this point, and again, take it with a bag of salt, at this point looks like he's a little bit further ahead than Flowers in their respective improvements. But I will say this, and a veteran offensive lineman once told me this, and I can only go by what he said because I've never played offensive line in the National Football League, okay? You could tell. It would not have been a pretty sight. I was told that in these camp drills, the defensive end in the one-on-one drills will always have the advantage against the offensive tackle because the defensive end knows exactly what's coming. He knows the snap count. He knows the play they're going to run. And he knows what he has to do to attack just that one guy in front of him. Therefore, the offensive tackle will always be at a disadvantage in these training camp drills. That the truest test for your offensive tackles will come in the preseason games. Because now you are going against an opponent. There's an unknown factor on both sides of the ball. And you're in a real game situation with tempo, with consecutive reps, with guys who are setting guys up, with guys who are working off of other guys. I mean, for example, okay, you talk about Olivier Vernon, who had the better of Ereck Flowers yesterday. I think we would all agree.
I think that's fair.
Okay. Olivier Vernon knows that in these drills out here, he's not going to get chipped. He's not going to get doubled. He knows he's got a one-on-one move that he's going to execute against Ereck Flowers. And there will be no help. There will be no sliding of the protection. There will be no running of the quarterback to get away from the pressure. There will be no misdirection. There will be no play-action pass to hold that defender an extra step. So by the nature of these practices, okay, they are certainly geared to give the advantage to the defensive end in these drills. I make that clear because already, after one day of fully padded practices, I'm getting bombed up on Twitter about how, oh, Ereck Flowers had a rough day against Vernon. Oh, gee, I'm shocked. Come on. What we did see from Ereck Flowers yesterday, his feet were a lot quicker and his hands were a lot quicker. That we saw. Did Vernon have the better of him? Yes. And by the way, Olivier Vernon's an elite player.
Last time I checked, I think that's a fair assessment.
So put all of that together and do yourselves a favor. Wait on grading Ereck Flowers till you see the four preseason games and then tell me if there's been improvement. Don't be judging it on one fully padded practice.
Of course not. Listen, it's all about perspective.
Please.
A lot of people lose perspective after one practice, one series, of course.
Well, that's why we're here, to try to tell the people
games.
The truth.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to be so quick to judge. It's ridiculous.
All right. With that being said, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. We'll open up Twitter as well, hashtag Giants Chat. Jim is in Alabama. He gets us started here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are we doing, Jim?
Hey, guys. How are you this morning?
Doing well, Jim. What do you got for us?
Okay. I got a question about the tight end Evan Engram roundabout way. Here's my question. It's 3rd and 4. Opening drive in Dallas, Giants have the ball. They call a run to Perkins on the right side. Ingram's going to be the tight end on the right side, and we're in 11 personnel. Manning gets to the line. He sees the Giants is in there. The defense is in nickel, playing cover two with kind of a man under. And Sean Lee is on Evan Engram. Do you execute that run play, or do you audible to a pass?
Well, I think a lot will depend on also, you know, some of the other personnel on the field, too. I don't think you can look at it just if Sean Lee's going to get matched up with Evan Engram. I think that's really simplifying the matter. And I think a lot is going to depend on what happens with Engram and what he shows as a blocker throughout the course of the preseason. We've talked about this. He is very energetic. He's motivated to add that facet to his game. But to make judgments now, Jim, after we've had one full padded practice and very limited opportunity to see Engram, Ingram's blocking ability, it's too premature. I think the coaching staff's going to have a much better idea of how confident and how effective they think Ingram's going to be in week one by the time they see a few preseason games and actually throw him in the mix there. But I don't think it's as simple, just to answer your question, about where Sean Lee is on the field. I think matchup-wise plays a lot into how the defensive line is going to perform, too, for that Cowboys team.
I will just say this, and it was hard to hear you and understand you. There was a lot of echo in the call, and I couldn't really hear everything that you were setting up with the play. But if you're simply asking me about an isolation between Ingram and Sean Lee, because I agree with what Lance said.
Yeah.
But if we're going to just narrow it down to isolation, are you going to call a play there that's going to require Ingram to hold up Sean Lee and to neutralize him on the play? My answer to you is I need to see what he does in the preseason blocking guys of that caliber. Can he hold his own blocking a tight end and give my back a chance to make the play? If he shows me that through the preseason, there's a chance I might let him try it. It's
yeah,
that simple.
I guess that's my question based on what you guys have seen so far.
What have we seen?
Yeah,
you've been saying, hey, we got to get the pads on, We've got the pads on. You've got some data, some observations.
Very little.
We're talking about one
threat that we want him to be. If you can't block Sean Lee.
What we have now, if you go over to your kitchen table and you spill out a couple of granules of salt, that's what we have now. We have granules of salt. This is not nearly enough. Let's look at the four preseason games, and if we watch how many plays Ingram is in on and how many plays he's asked to block, then look at his positive and minus chart on plays he's asked to block. Greatest plays. I'll do it. I'll do it for you. You don't have to if you don't want to. I'm going to do it for you. I'm going to grade Ingram's blocking during the preseason. I'll grade every play. That's what I do. I watch film. I don't sleep. So I will tell you this. If his grades come out good after four preseason games that he can do it, you might just try it in the Dallas game.
And who's to also say that they may not put in Rhett Ellison in those circumstances too? Remember, it's not like they don't have other tight ends that have experience at blocking. This is the one thing I will say, Jim, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thanks.
Is the fact that even though there's only been one full padded practice, and I think your analogy was fair. I'm glad you went to the food analogy. You never disappoint with that, Paul. The fact that he's been showing willingness and is okay to engage with contact, I think, is at least promising, Paul. Is that fair?
Without question.
And those we've seen, even in the practices where they're in their underwear, in their shorts, and in their jerseys, he's been engaging in contact. And for somebody that was not asked to do a whole lot of that in Ole Miss, once again, it's promising. That doesn't mean it's the end-all, be-all. All I'm saying is you have to have the desire to do that before you even get to be tested when you have your pads on.
It's clear that the willingness and eagerness is there. And so now we just have to see him do it.
It's got to now translate into an actual game situation. All right, let's head back to the lines. Mike is in Beantown. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys? Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making it, Mike. What do you have for us?
All right. Hey, just two questions. Obviously, with the injury with Sterling Shepard, you know, I was one of the people, too, you had mentioned that had gotten all anxious about it. And I'm glad to hear it sound a little bit more optimistic. But it got me thinking, just a little bit curious, as far as some of the different ways that they might experiment with, let's say, Tavarius King, just curious, if they run like an 11 personnel package, let's say, in the Pittsburgh game with Evan Ingram as the tight end, who do you think would play slot? You think that they would have King on the outside with maybe Beckham in the slot and Marshall on the outside? Or how do you think that they might... put Tavarius King in there.
Tavarius King is not a slot guy. Yes, King is not a slot guy. Tavarius King is going to be out wide, and he's going to run a deep route because he's got tremendous speed. And that's the only way you're going to use him.
Right.
Now, here's the interesting part. Brandon Marshall did a lot of slot work with the Jets.
He did.
Now, to this point, we haven't really seen him do that with the Giants.
Yeah.
What about if the Giants pull something out of their sleeve and all of a sudden, oh, no, they line up Marshall in the slot, and now the other team's like, well, we haven't seen that in the preseason. That might be one of the surprises that you see because the Giants have not really shown that in camp. But all of a sudden, if he does it, you shouldn't be shocked because he has done it before in his career.
Beckham's an option in the slot. Engram's an option in the slot. Marshall, as you mentioned, is an option in the slot. They have more than enough options to put in there if Shepard's
right.
not fully healthy. And, you know, Tavares King's a vertical threat. If that is what you've seen throughout the course of his NFL career, if you ask me what his MO is, he's a guy, you give him the green light, he'll go deep down the field like he did in that Packers game. He could beat and burst past his defender one-on-one and hopefully off a deep route make a long catch. But I think they have other options that they would move inside.
Nice. Yeah, I was just curious about some of the – yeah, and I'm sure that that'll only enhance the playbook. I just wanted to say, too, you know, in the offseason, I've heard a lot of callers, you know, give kudos to Jerry Reese, and rightfully so, with all the moves that have been made in the offseason. Just wanted to say I'm very pleased with Ben McAdoo. And last year I was a lot more skeptical about him in the offseason, and I've been so impressed with a lot of the little nuances with – what he's done coaching, not just because we made it 11-5, but I think that there are so many little dynamics that he's done very well, and I'm very happy to have him as a head coach. One of the things this week that I kind of bite my fingernails a little bit with is when the players do start playing physical again and put the pads on, it just seems like there's so many injuries in this time of year, maybe because, you know, the muscles are not right, you know, and the tendons too are a little bit stiff, whatever the case may be, because they haven't been playing at this level and maybe there's some anxiousness, and he's been easing the players into that. So that's been kind of nice to see, because I know some of the other teams have really suffered with a lot of injuries, and I'm glad we haven't had that yet. I know it's early, you know, to be saying that, but even last year, Weston Richburg with the ligaments in his hand, we found out later. Sometimes players play through injury throughout the season.
No doubt.
But they're not playing at the same level.
Yep.
And I'd hate to see that happen this year. So I just want to say that. One quick question, though. I did want to ask you guys, and then, you know, I don't want to take up too much time so you can take other callers. But cornerbacks. Obviously, we have, you know, three studs for our starters in Eli Apple. I know he's made a lot of improvements. Jack Rabbit and DRC. And the depth behind that, I think Dante Dion has gotten a little bit of attention as a slot guy potentially, but I just wanted to see if you guys can give some feedback on who you think outside of the top three we might fall on in the event that there's an injury with DRC, our slot guy, because that really messed us up in the Green Bay game, and some, you know, it happens, you know, the cornerbacks go down. Or if one of our other two, Apple or Jackrabbit, were to go down, I think that they'd probably shift DRC outside.
Yes.
What do you think that they might do? What can we expect to see, you know, as far as who might step in the event that one of those guys goes down?
All right, Mike. Appreciate the phone call.
It looks like the top three guys in contention for the number four spot right now, Dion, Michael Hunter,
yeah.
Valentino Blake. Not necessarily in that order. Now, Blake's got himself a back.
He's been sidelined.
Did not practice yesterday. Now, he's the veteran of the group. The other guys have barely any experience. Dion practiced squad IR last year. Michael Hunter had token action. It's possible the Giants' fourth corner opening day comes from outside. It could happen. I mean, much like Leon Hall was a training camp arrival last year.
But he came in right around this time.
He did.
He wasn't added, you know,
correct.
Right as they were finalizing the
53. Correct.
Yeah.
But it's entirely possible that happened. See, the thing is here, Hunter I don't see as a slot guy. He's an outside corner.
More of an outside guy. Yeah.
Dion is a slot guy. So those guys play different positions. All right? They're not interchangeable. So now, like if you said to me, Apple or Jenkins went down, there's no question. DRC goes to the outside, I think, and Dante Dion becomes the slot guy. But now, if DRC were to go down, well, then I think probably if they really like what Hunter's doing on the outside or Blake's doing on the outside, they would put one of those guys outside and maybe move Apple to the slot,
yeah,
or
Apple,
Jenkins to the slot.
And Apple got some experience last year's camp. If you remember, they
yes.
were interchanging the guys because they wanted to prepare for in case an injury comes up. So I think Apple probably would be the guy that would be maybe first in line to take over the slot because they're comfortable with other options on the outside.
Unless they really think that Dante Dion is so good in the slot that he just becomes that first option there no matter what. And I don't know that they feel that yet. I think they need more evidence.
Yeah, I think they need more evidence in terms of the preseason games, seeing how he mans up with some of the competition. Of the three you named, I think Valentino Blake has the most versatility that you could put inside and outside. And part of that is because he's the polished veteran. But you're right, we're limited because we haven't seen much of him. But I'm just going off of what I've seen in terms of when he's with the Steelers, when he's with Tennessee. I think, personally, he has the most versatility. Michael Hunter, I will say this, just watching him in individual drills, I think the coaching staff is very fond of how much progress he's made given his limited experience.
That is true. He's been very eager to learn. He has a really nice skill set. He's got length. He's got height. He's got some strength about him. He's got some speed. A lot of really good tools to bring to the field on the outside. Okay? Now, the question is, does he have the coverage skills, the recognition, the anticipation, all of the things that you have to have to put together to be successful? Last year in limited action, it didn't turn out so well. But, again, he was a rookie. All right, primarily a practice squad guy who had cameo appearances. Now it's like, okay, let's see what kind of progress we can get out of you. If you can really get coached up in year two, maybe you can make that jump. They're certainly not giving up on him. I mean, there's no question. He's in a battle, and he's going to be given an opportunity to prove his worth.
Now, the other guy that I think we should throw out, but once again, small sample size because of the injury history, but also could play the slot, is Mykel Thompson, of course. But once again, he's in the show-me state of his tenure here with the Giants, which is he's got the ability. He played the slot corner position at Texas, just hasn't really been healthy enough to stay on the field.
Although I think it's interesting that in the last several days here, as training camp has started, he has been playing more outside corner than any other position in the secondary. It looks to me like they've decided he's not in the safety mix, and he's going to be given an opportunity to try to win a spot on the depth chart at cornerback, because I think it's clear, based on the configurations out on the practice field, they have an understanding that their corner spot is thinner than their safety spot.
And that's why they're experimenting with the different mixes and matches throughout the course of practice. All right, let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Bash is in Ohio. Bash, what's happening?
How are you doing, Lance? How are you doing, Paul?
Hi.
All right, Bash.
How are you doing? I called in late, so I want to get a little quick update on Sterling. I was called in, so I don't know if y'all talked about it at the beginning of the program or anything. It's a quick recap of Sterling.
Well, we mentioned off the top, Ben McAdoo spoke after practice. It's a rolled ankle is what they're classifying it as, a basketball type of injury. And Ben McAdoo seemed to be optimistic that it's not going to be a serious injury that would keep him out for an extended period of time. But he's going to undergo further tests. So until he undergoes those further tests as a precaution, I don't think they truly at this point have an idea of how long he may be sidelined and to how serious of a sprain it is.
Okay. I heard previous caller talking about as far as options. Is this an opportunity for Travis Rudolph to get some playing time in the slot? I know he's a slot player at Florida State. So is this an opportunity for him to get some playing time?
It's an opportunity for everybody on that depth chart to get some extra playing time and maybe some extra work at different positions. You know, one of the things that we've noticed about the first few days of camp is that Rudolph's been back there in a regular rotation fielding punts. And, you know, that's a good thing for him.
Because he didn't do a lot of special teams at Florida State. So he needs to prove that before he even starts making a statement at the receiver position. Because if you're going to make the team on the back end, you have to contribute on special teams. And he didn't do a lot of that in college.
Okay, and I wanted to talk. I heard Ben McAdoo talking yesterday about Mark, and I wanted to talk about him on the offensive side as far as Mark Hurdless. He was playing a little bit tight end. He hasn't seen Ben talking about as far as he went out for a few passes. So I wanted to ask about Mark being in on the offensive side of the ball, what situations he would be in, his role in the tight end situation. I remember y'all talking yesterday as far as a caller called in about if Britt Ellison went down, and would Mark be an option as far as his blocking and catching skills? What do y'all see from Mark so far in training?
Well, Mark's flashed from what we've seen of him lining up at tight end. But, you know, I want to go back here. This is really nothing new. Mark Herzlich's been used as a tight end for the scout team over the last few years. So, you know, he's had experience. They just never obviously have utilized him in a game because they've had other options. But, you know, this wasn't one of the things where they woke up before the start of training camp and they said, Mark, you're going to all of a sudden become a tight end. He's already had some experience. And it's also not very new for the Giants to move players to both sides of the football. The name is off the tip of my tongue here. There was a fullback that
played defensive line. Whitlock, correct.
That's
Nikita Whitlock.
Correct. So Nikita Whitlock, because of his experience at Wake Forest, he played fullback, and then they lined him up on the defensive line, and, you know, they mixed and matched. And he wasn't necessarily playing defensive line very often during the course of the regular season. They maybe picked their points here or there that they would put him in a game like that. So I think they're testing the waters with Herzlich, but I find it very hard to believe, Paul, that in the event that even somebody gets hurt, that Herzlich is going to skyrocket up the depth chart and he'll move past other guys like Jarrell Adams or Matt Lacoste if they wind up making the team.
It would be very hard for me to see that. I would add one other thing, though. You know, this is something that Mark Herzlich went to the coaches and said, I'm certainly willing to do more work at tight end. I know I've done some of it in practice for the scout team for you, but I'm willing to do a little bit more. I'm curious. I'd like to give it a shot. And so they were willing to do so. Again, McAdoo not at all afraid about giving people an opportunity to show some versatility. And that's what this is all about. I wouldn't read much into it other than if it turns out at some point it pays dividends for a player, well, that's great. That's about it.
Yeah, if anything, it helps the cause to make the team if they could see that you could do special teams, you could do defense, and in a pinch, we can also use you on offense. So I think that's also part of the mindset of Herzlich, saying, hey, a lot more competition on this team. If I want to make sure I solidify a spot, what better way to do that than to say I can contribute on all three facets
of the team? I would caution everybody, though. We won't see snacks at wide receiver.
I think that's a fair assumption on your part, yes. Though I'm sure a lot of people would love to see that, and he wouldn't mind running a route or two. But I don't know if we want to see that during a game. And appreciate the phone call, Bash. Thanks. Yeah, real quick, what else you got? Bash, we lost him? Okay. Thought we still had him on the line. We'll hopefully get that question on a future show. All right, how about Dave in Cranford? Dave, what's happening? How we doing?
Hey guys, good to talk to you guys again. Hey,
hi.
Paul, I wanted to get your comment and both of you guys on a couple things. One was I really like where the defense is coming. I think Eli Apple, you know, and showing the progress that, you know, a lot of people, you guys have said, you know, was a really good candidate to take a step up. Looks like that's happening with him, at least initially. And I think that can really have a really big impact, you know, on the defense. But really it was a comment by I think it was Casillas who was being interviewed, and he talked about the relationship of trust developing between Spagnuolo and the defensive players themselves. And as you guys know, that doesn't happen all the time. That's something that a team has to earn. But when you can have that communication where the defense feels like they can be listened to and the coach takes that into consideration – I think that has a real chance to have a real strong impact. I'd just like to get you guys' comments on it.
Well, that was one of the keys to Spagnuolo's Super Bowl defense of the 2007 season, because as much as Spags is a wizard, and I don't think anybody is going to underestimate his ability to put together complex schemes and things that can really help a defense improve, he also needs the tools. And last year, the Giants gave him the tools on defense to allow him to literally mix up that Rubik's Cube into a billion different combinations so that he could succeed. Now, having said that, it was the guys in the 2007 season, and I was around those guys every day, those guys on defense told me that one of the primary reasons that Spags was such a great defensive coordinator is because as much as they trusted and believed in him, he trusted and believed in them, and he was never afraid to literally write plays up on the sideline out of nowhere. He would go to the bench and say to Strahan, Michael, what'd you see on that? Yeah, okay, you want to try that? Sure, no problem. So, OC, this is what Michael's going to do. And they would literally draw plays up in the dirt on the bench on the fly because Spags trusted his guys enough to know they were good enough to execute and to know that they were smart enough to understand where they felt the mismatches could occur. And so that was the give and take, which I think made Spagnuolo a phenomenal defensive coordinator, not just his acumen, but his ability to get that interaction with his players and use it to the benefit of the unit. And I think that's what you're seeing now, because the unit proved to Spags last year that they deserved and commanded his respect and trust so that it could be a two-way street again. The defense that the Giants had 2 years ago did not have the ability or the performance that could command that type of trust and respect. And again, I'm reaching here a little bit because I don't want to speak for Spags, but I'm sure he would probably tell you he wasn't going to be that way with a defense that had not earned it.
Well, and I think the other thing to take into note, and what you just touched on, is there's much more continuity in the defense from 2016 to 17, whereas you were referring to when Spags returned to the Giants at 15, you know, it was a defense very much in transition, and you knew a number of those players weren't going to return for 16, and then, let's not forget, the JPP finger injury. He doesn't have a full season with mm-hmm. him, so last year was the first time where he got all those ingredients together. I sound like you. I'm making the food analogies, and all of a sudden, everything was starting to be put together. He got a better idea, better taste of the defense. Now you look into 2017, he has a full season to base off of what he went through last year. He feels the personnel's back. Now he feels a little bit more flexible. Also, let's not forget, Jonathan Casillas was with him when he was in New Orleans. So if there's any player that I think can step back and reflect on Spags and understand when Spags gets to the point where he truly trusts the defense, it's a guy that played with him in a completely different team in a completely different situation.
Basically, in 15, he had the meatballs without the pork and the breadcrumbs.
Yes.
Really?
Now he's
Sounds
got everything.
Great. Hey, Paul, can I ask you, and Lance, one other thing, maybe switching sides of the ball for a second. What do you think last year we obviously saw such a big dose of the standard cover two safety look on, you know, when defenses were playing and basically bracketing Odell all over the field. I'm trying to put my head into the, you know, mind of a defensive coordinator looking at our offensive weapons and how they're going to attack and cover this offense. And I got to think that they're going to see a really strong dose of zone, you know, maybe matchup zone, but a lot of zone coverage. I just don't think there's enough corners on most defenses that think that they're going to be able to man up successfully against the weapons the Giants are going to put out there. I'd love to kind of, you know, get your guys' thoughts on that.
All right, Dave. Appreciate the phone call.
Well, I think coordinators can take a couple of different tacks on this. If they zone them, okay, the problems they're going to have is that the Giants have really good route runners. Shepard, Beckham, Marshall, all really good route runners, and they can slice a zone. How many times did defenses pay for zoning Beckham last year, and he'd run that short cross, and boom, he was gone because they're playing single high safety?
Baltimore is the first game that comes to
it
mind.
It happened many times.
But the Baltimore game specifically, boy, did they pay for that.
So that's not necessarily a great way to go. If you try to man these guys up, it looks like you're going to have some problems because they seem to be incredibly skilled. To me, there are two ways you want to attack the Giants offense. One is you absolutely want to blitz the living heck out of that offensive line. Or should I say, you want to get pressure without the blitz. Let's face it, because Eli usually does well against the blitz, and that leaves your secondary exposed. You got to get pressure. That's the first thing. If you can't get, and I know it sounds simple because everybody says you got to get pressure on the quarterback every week. I get that. But it's going to be imperative for any defense to get mega heat on what we believe is a suspect Giants offensive line to have a chance to stop this weaponry, because they're just too good. Now, the second thing is, simply put, disguise. You're going to have to out-guess and out-chess match Eli Manning and Ben McAdoo. Disguise your blitzes. Disguise your schemes. Disguise your zones. You're going to have to do a lot of that stuff because Eli is so good at diagnosing things, but maybe the rest of his guys won't be on the same page. And maybe you have the chance that somebody will read it wrong and then the pass will be errant to be picked off or the pass will bust and it won't work out. Or Eli's going to get sacked because he called for a hot read. Marshall didn't catch it, and now the defensive end nails your quarterback. That's about it. That's about all you can do right now based on what the Giants are putting on the field. But that's why football's so great, because it's a chess match on every single play. I love this game.
Yes, the chess match indeed. But I think a lot of it is also going to come down to, before you even start talking about what defenses are going to see, you know, how effective the running game is. Because
that
dictates to the opposing defenses what they want to do in terms of man-to-man or zone, or, you know, do they have the flexibility to keep both safeties back because they feel, you know what, our front seven alone is going to be able to handle the run.
That's a good point, Lance, because I was strictly talking about basically your passing game. The fact is, if the Giants don't establish a running game, they're going to allow defenses to cheat.
Yeah.
Because it becomes almost half as easy for them to then do what I was just talking about if they know the Giants can't run the ball.
So that, to me, dictates the chess match before the chess match even starts. The run game.
Very good.
I'm
glad you reversed my field on that, because I kind of skipped over that and got to the passing part of it because he was talking about the weapons.
Well, but he was also, what Dave the last caller was referring to also, was he was referring to the schemes that the Giants saw a lot last season, where they were keeping two safeties high. And why were they keeping two safeties high? Because they weren't worried about coming closer to the box and stop the run.
Schemes all predicated on cheating away from the run because you didn't have to deal with it.
So that's something to monitor. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We go across the pond. Jay is in England. Jay, what's happening?
What's going on, guys? I'm in a minute.
Hi.
Doing well, Jay. What do you got for us?
All right, so I know with new teams, new players, you continuity and getting to know your guys is kind of important. So I haven't seen anything. How is Brandon Marshall and OBJ's relationship together? And are they gelling and, you know, having camaraderie and stuff like that?
I think they've said all the right things to the media. They seem to have been getting along. I mean, if you've seen any of those social media clips, these guys are having a dance party every single day in the locker room, Jay. So, I mean, forget the relationship of Brandon Marshall and Odell Beckham. I think everybody right now is on cloud nine and gelling quite well.
And I agree with that, although I want to add here that I've had a number of comments on Twitter come over to me about Marshall and Beckham. We've even had some calls about it in the last week. It's more important that Marshall gels with Eli Manning.
Of course. Yeah.
And, well, no doubt. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's just make that very clear. But, yes, he and Odell get along quite well.
Yeah, the only reason why I say that is because I see him as a good mentor to Odell. And especially with everything he's been through, and just his professionalism going forward.
Well, Jay, I'll give you one example just to maybe provide some insight of how the relationship is developing. Walking off the practice field, I was observing Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall. Marshall must have had a few friends that were in attendance to watch one of the training camp practices, so they obviously greeted Brandon Marshall after practice. Brandon was signing some things. He calls over Odell Beckham because obviously the family or the friends that were with Marshall, they wanted to meet Odell, came over. Odell signed a bunch of things, and they spent a few minutes taking pictures and talking. So, you know, I mean, I don't see any sign that, you know, there's tension or whatever there may be. I think that they established that relationship as soon as Marshall signed with the team, and they've been communicating even when Beckham wasn't here at the facility, and they seem to be getting along quite fine. I think the receiver group overall is a pretty close group, and this goes back to, you know, what Paul and I were talking about, the fact that when the nucleus of your team returns, I think it's a lot easier to welcome in a new guy because you're confident with the existing group. And the receiving core, while there are some new faces on the back end, you know, you have Odell Beckham, you have Sterling Shepard, you have Tavares King, you have Roger Lewis, you have Dwayne Harris. So, I mean, that group is already through the battlefields over a season. It's not that difficult for them to say, hey, Brandon's a polished veteran, we can welcome him in. And I think the transition has been fairly smooth.
All right, that makes sense. Hey, John, I need a favor from you, actually.
Well, it's Lance, John's not here.
John can't do you any favors here,
Jay.
You know, John's a little taller, John, actually.
Yeah. And John's got a little less hair, but that's
all true,
other
too.
Yeah,
so, Lance, let you and John, I need you, both of you guys, to do me a favor. Paul has his guys that he likes to talk about every draft that usually get snagged up by other teams. Could you just cut his mic next year?
We can work on that. We can work on cutting his mic anytime randomly during the course of the year. How about that?
It does tend to happen. But hey, hold on a second now. Nobody got their hands on Davis Webb. You heard me tout him, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. So He's still got one of my guys, didn't they? Making progress
on that front. Yes. Anything else we can do for you, Jay? You're good? All right. Appreciate the phone call.
I'm good.
Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, let's continue to move through the lines here. Dominic is in Florida. Dominic, what's happening?
Hey, not much. I was wondering about switching back to defense. I was wondering if Valentino Blake is still out, and the Giants aren't particularly comfortable with one of the other two guys. What about having either Andrew Adams or Landon Collins come down, because we have another safety. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that.
Bad idea. First of all, Collins is too valuable doing what he's doing as a safety. And the other thing is, Andrew Adams is more of a strong safety than he is a pure cover guy. You know, you're not going to use either of those guys in the Antrell role spot that they employed a couple of years back when they needed him to man the slot because they didn't have anybody else. Remember, Rowe came into the league as a cornerback also.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
And remember that game, I don't mean to interrupt here, but the game that comes to mind is Cowboys-Giants, and there was an injury. I think it was Terrell Thomas got hurt, and Rowe moved into the slot.
And they went at him three times in a row.
Exactly. That was the game that Romo set up the game-winning field goal for Bailey,
I think,
as time expired.
Thanks, Lance.
Listen, I'm not trying to pour salt in the wounds. That's the fact.
No, it was very difficult to watch that because Roll was caught on three straight completions, and I really felt bad for him because he's trying to help the team as best as he can, and he was overmatched in the spot.
Now, Dominic, to reflect on what you said, I could see them, and they did this at times, they could line up Landon Collins in the slot off a blitz. Like that I could see them perhaps doing if they bring him down towards the box. Janoris Jenkins, they did that where they moved him around. He got a sack off a blitz.
I wouldn't want to do that.
Well, I'm not saying you do that often. But if they wanted a toy with that look, that I could buy. But I don't think you regularly want them in that position because Landon Collins' strength is his versatility. And if you try to narrow his range, that's when I think you get into trouble.
Well, I was just asking, just in case of a pinch situation. But thank you, guys. I'm a huge fan of your show.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in.
I'll take it off the line. Thank you. You got it.
Okay.
And listen, even if you want to speculate in terms of in a pinch type of moment, it's very rare that you're going to lose your entire depth chart of corners. I mean, we were talking about three other guys that could very well be in the mix. It depends on who makes the team. Of course, Michael Thompson is another one who's got the versatility at safety and corner. I think they would turn to somebody that has that on their resume before they'd move to somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience in terms of moving around from position to position. Mm-hmm. Let's head back to the line. Cedric is in Georgia. Cedric, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Hey, what's going on, guys? It's my first time calling. So
hi.
Welcome aboard. Absolutely.
Yeah, long time listening. But I just want to, before I get to my comments, I just want to say tip of the cap to Ben McAdoo. First and foremost, you know, I'm a Tom Coughlin disciple. Paul, I'm like you old school, ride it out. Brandon Jacobs, run you over style of football. But I love how they made the transition with this whole youth movement. I think the best players on our team are like about 25 or younger. So the future looks pretty bright there, don't you guys think?
In some ways, the Giants are a lot like the Yankees right now. They've got a mix of some key guys who are clearly on the older end of the spectrum, but they also have some really good key guys who are on the younger side of the spectrum. It really is a lot like the Yankees.
Yeah. But just to get to my question, I know you guys, like you said earlier, it's probably like the few little grains of salt that's been poured on the table, so you really don't have that deep analysis yet. But just wanted to look at what Paul Perkins is looking like. And also Geno Smith, the number two quarterback spot, I think that is a real indicator kind of going forward. I think a lot of people listening are like, oh, Geno Smith, ah. But the guy looks like he's in pretty good shape. I just wanted to see, like I just said, with the youth movement and Eli, possibly moving on in a couple years or so, just seeing him or Davis Webb being able to take control of the team and kind of move forward with Odell and Sterling Shepard and Evan Ingram and Paul Perkins. You'll have a nice, supporting cast to work with, whoever takes over their role.
Well, that's how you have to go about building an NFL team in this day and age, Cedric. You can't just think about the now, 2017. You have to think about how your team may pan out 2 or 3 years down the road. I would not overlook a guy that you didn't mention, who is Josh Johnson, who is still very much in the mix for the backup quarterback position with Geno Smith. And remember, he's got a full year under his belt of knowing this system. He ran the scout team. The two of them actually spoke to the media yesterday, both Josh Johnson and Geno Smith. I think the optimistic feel for Geno is that he seems to be making progress from that torn ACL. He's not wearing a knee brace. He feels good, he says. Listen, it's always a work in progress, but there's going to be a stiff competition between Geno Smith and Josh Johnson. I don't know if I would say anyone has a specific edge. If anything, Johnson knows the system, so that's his edge, but I always say in the backup quarterback competition, we separate the men from the boys in the preseason.
I will say physically, Davis Webb has looked really good. Had a terrific camp when he first got here in the spring. He continues to look better and better and better here in August. A little bit inconsistent with his throws, but he does throw a nice ball. Now, what we don't know is what's going on in the classroom and in terms of what he's seeing or what he's calling, if he's making the right moves out there, because we don't have access to the plays that they're supposed to be running, and we certainly don't have access to the quizzes that the coaches are giving the players. But we believe that that's one of the strengths of Davis Webb as a quarterback, is his mentality and his approach to the game and his study habits. So one would think he's doing well there as well. I will say this. I think Davis Webb has a chance. I don't think they want to. I think they want to make him the three the whole season. But my bold prediction a couple of weeks ago was that he'll take snaps in a regular season game before this season is over. I think that will happen.
Meaning a blowout, of course.
Yeah, I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about a
do-or-die. Just clarifying in case somebody was like, "What the hell is the Tino?"
I don't think it's going to be a do-or-die situation, but I do think he's going to see some snaps. I think they're that fond of him, and I think he might come along that quickly that they may just give him a taste at some point in a less than meaningful situation. Okay, as far as Paul Perkins is concerned, Perkins is much more confident because he's had a full year now, not only with the team, but a whole off season to prepare, where he didn't have that last year. So he feels totally different coming into the deal this year. And he also knows that Coach McAdoo has said he's the number one guy, which, again, is a responsibility he seems to be embracing. Now, the only thing I will say to you when we talk about the salt and the small sample size that we have, the skill position guys are probably the guys you can tell a little bit more about because they're not as reliant on contact for their performance. So when you see running backs with their quick moves and their jukes and their speed while they're running free and while they're catching the ball, are they catching it in stride? Are they looking the ball in? Are they cutting upfield as soon as they have it? There are things you can tell about the defensive backs, the wide receivers, the tight ends to some degree, and the running backs to some degree, and the quarterbacks, how they throw. There's a little bit more you can tell about those guys. So I would say yes. Right now, the arrow looks good for Paul Perkins.
Yeah, and the funny thing about I love the Davis Webb pick. I know we had Deontay Foreman that got drafted by the Texans that was still on the board at that time. I kind of was, you know, cheering for him. But then we picked Davis Webb, and I was like, at first I was like, oh, no, Deontay Foreman, we could have a strong backfield. But then I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of like the guy. I like his throw. I think he's up there with the kid that got picked by the Chiefs on with his arm on talent.
Yeah, Mahomes, you're talking about Patrick Mahomes.
Davis Webb, by the time this is all said and done, and I haven't felt this good about a Giants rookie quarterback probably since Jeff Hostetler. And I'm not talking about Eli, because Eli was drafted as a franchise guy. Okay?
Correct.
Haas was drafted as a developmental guy. Okay? This guy, Davis Webb, is a developmental guy. Okay? I haven't felt this good about a developmental rookie quarterback with the Giants since Jeff Hostetler.
Now, let me ask you this. Will Davis Webb try to campaign to be a wide receiver like Jeff Hostetler to get on the field? Would you like to make a bold prediction?
I would rather he didn't do that.
Okay, I was just curious. Well, when you brought up Hostetler, the one thing that jumps out to me is he was so itching to get on the field,
yes.
The guy would basically be willing to just play about any position.
He played wide receiver, and he played on the edge on special teams to block punts. I mean, Haas was eager.
Yep. All right, Cedric.
Well, you guys said Coach McAdoo lets players, play.
Well, I don't think Davis Webb is doing that.
Cedric, there's a difference between letting a linebacker play tight end and a quarterback play wide receiver, you know.
Right,
there's got to be a place where you
draw
the line. We were only obviously having some good fun at Paul's expense to test him and his archives, but we appreciate the phone call. One thing I want to point out before we head back to the phone lines is we have got a few minutes left on the program. In terms of the backup quarterback job that's up for grabs right now, because I would agree with you. I think, listen, Davis Webb can have an impressive preseason, but I still think they'd be comfortable putting him as the third stringer and having a veteran quarterback in that second spot. Does the mindset for the Giants, does this have to enter part of the mindset, Paul, what I mean by this? Geno's 26, Josh Johnson's 31. Is there more of an upside to say that Geno could still also be in the mix to be a successor, and there would be more reason to keep somebody like that if Eli were to retire, as opposed to Josh Johnson, who's already up there in age?
Not if it was my decision. It's a plausible question. But I think the guy that you want to be that number two is a guy who's just going to manage the game and not lose it, because the Giants are in a win-now mentality.
I agree with that.
With a defense that should be able to not only keep you in games, but actually win you some games as long as your quarterback doesn't screw it up. So I think the number two veteran on this roster, on this team, this year, in this situation, just has to manage the game.
No, I agree with you. I'm thinking that long-term and short-term philosophy perhaps colliding, given where both quarterbacks are at their respective stages in their careers.
I'll say this to you. I will be surprised, and I'm going to make this statement now, and I think I've even said it before. 2018, week number one, Davis Webb's the number two quarterback on this team. I don't care what veterans are around. Davis Webb is going to be number two.
Well, I think that would obviously be the goal. That's a big reason why they drafted him where they did. But Geno, it's hard for me, I guess, to overlook the fact that you look at what he's done with the Jets and all the ups and downs. You figure that he's much older, but he's only 26 years old.
I know.
Still a very young quarterback that, if he could get back to full health, could have a number of seasons ahead of him.
He's got four preseason games to show it.
Yeah, indeed. All right, let's head back to the lines. Jason's in Maine. Jason, what's happening?
Not much. How about you guys?
Doing well, Jason.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
Just two questions for you. The first one, I wonder if you guys can talk for a minute about Nat Burhe, like how he's doing physically, and just because I really do think this guy has a lot of potential, and was just wondering, have you seen him on the field? Does he look okay? Is he looking good so far?
He seems to be okay. We talked to him the other day. He had a press briefing and said he's not worried at all about the concussion history and that he's still going to play his game, and he's confident and feels like he can earn a spot on this team. And look, I don't ever want to say the guy doesn't have the right to earn a spot in training camp. He has a right. I would never say he doesn't deserve that opportunity. But I would say this. Being that he does have a concussion injury, as well as some other injuries that have kept him off the field, I think anybody who goes into training camp assuming that he's got a leg up or that he's got a really good chance to make it, I think they're misguided. I think he's got an uphill climb, if for no other reason that he hasn't proven an ability to stay in the game.
It's like we were talking about with Mykel Thompson, you know, upside potential, just the durability issue. It's unfortunate for Nat Burhe, because if there was any season, Paul, that he truly could have made that big statement, was when Darian Thompson goes
last
down
year
in week two. Burhe takes over as the starter, and Burhe's probably saying to himself, I'm finally healthy, I finally put the calf issue behind me, and then all of a sudden he winds up suffering the concussion and ends up with Darian Thompson on the sideline.
You know, Matt Lacoste is in the same spot.
Yeah.
Matt Lacoste can play this game. I think Nat Burhe can play this game too. But you got to be available. If you're not available, you can't help the coach.
The one thing I will say about Burhe, and this is more of off the field than on the field, it seems to me, Paul, just listening to when he spoke to the media, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
He does.
Regardless of how little or how much he's played. In the
defensive player's mentality.
And maybe that is, but to me, the most impressive answer to one of the questions he was asked was he was asked about assessing the safety group right now. And he said, when he was asked, what do you see? He says, I see an all-pro. That was his answer. Now, I'm not saying that Nat Burhe was taking a shot, because he did clarify. He said, listen, we're a competitive group. But his point was, and I think there's validity to this point, regardless of what you think of Darian Thompson and the upside, it really is an unproven group outside of Landon Collins. Matt Berhe's not wrong.
Andrew Adams has proven he can play in this league.
But it's a limited sample size.
It is still 1 year.
It's very limited for all of these guys. So I don't blame Berhe, regardless, again, of his lack of durability, for going into this offseason and saying, you know what, hey, Landon Collins jumped out. But other than that, if I go out and I make a statement, hey, who knows? Maybe I can carve out a role. But it's going to be tough because he's got to prove that he can stay on the field. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
But let me just say one thing in clarification. Matt Lacoste hasn't suffered concussions. Now Berhe has dealt with concussions in the past. That, to me, makes it a little bit more of a long shot for him, because that's something you just don't want to mess with.
And you're also putting your career in perspective, like any player is who has to deal with lingering concussions. I mean, look, Luke Kuechly of the Carolina Panthers was sidelined for a portion of last season. He's one of the top linebackers in the NFL as a result of that. So that's no joke, no matter where you are at this stage in your NFL career. All right, so practice is going to be starting up. We will have full updates on tomorrow's program. Big Blue Kickoff Live back up and running at 10 a.m. Eastern. We certainly appreciate all the phone calls and all the tweets.
Don't forget tonight, 6 p.m. on MSG Eastern Time. I'll be back with Giants Training Camp Live, and we'll recap everything that happened today.
Absolutely. So stay tuned to Giants.com for all the latest. We appreciate everybody for tuning in to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.